It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Glad to have you back with us in the second half of this noon hour here on Iowa Public Radio. Well, I guess many of us, since 2016, we hear news about this new poll or that new poll. We hear it in a different way, or we put have a different shade of lens when we hear about poll news. We want to talk about this this half hour. Also about a particular poll, the Hawkeye poll, showing that Fred Hubbell, with a narrow advantage over Kim Reynolds in the gubernatorial race. University of Iowa Hawkeye poll is our guests are involved with that poll. Frederick Bemke is a professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Also joining me in the studio, Barrett Bierschank is a political science student at the University of Iowa. Fred Bemke and Barrett Bierschank, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let me start off with you, Professor Bemke. Tell us about the Hawkeye poll. For those who don't know about it, introduce us to it. How long has it been around? What does it do?
The Hawkeye poll has been around for a little over 12 years now. We started with the 2007 Iowa caucus. We've continued to do surveys of Iowans around caucus time, as well as in alternate years in Iowa, Johnson County, and national studies as well. The primary goal of the Hawkeye poll is to provide a teaching and research opportunity for students and faculty at the University of Iowa. And so the Department of Political Science works with other departments, journalism, sociology, to create a series of courses in which students will participate in the poll. They get to write questions, they get to participate in collecting data, and they get to participate in writing press releases and, you know, occasionally getting involved in interviews like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell us specifically about this year, the design of the polling this year.
Yeah, so this year we decided to do a focus on Iowa with the upcoming election. We also have some questions that we wrote for a national component of the study that is still in field, still wrapping up. We wanted to focus on getting Iowa results ready to talk about the election. And so those are ready first. We had a little over 100 students involved in the Hawkeye poll this fall semester. We have students that get involved through extra credit for their classes. We have students in classes that talk about public opinion or survey research or data collection. I'm teaching a class on information, society, and culture, and those students had a chance to volunteer for extra credit to learn a little bit about where data come from. Barrett was involved through a very focused class called the Hawkeye Poll, which focuses specifically on survey research.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about the findings there. I gave sort of the headline of this poll as we started off there. Before we talk about maybe the methodology of this poll, give us the chief finding of this gubernatorial poll.
Yeah. So for the governor's race, as you mentioned earlier, we find a slight edge for Fred Hubbell, 43.6% to 40%. That is within the margin of error. We completed 496 surveys.
That's 6 percentage points. That's a pretty large margin error of
3.6%.
3.6. Okay.
Is the difference. The margin of error is 4.5%.
Okay.
And so, you know, that suggests a leaning that way, but it's not sufficiently large to be conclusive, in a statistical sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these results are very close to what the Des Moines Register poll found just a few weeks before us. We were in field from October 8th to October 22nd, and so right when the debates were starting, and then we called for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the sample size and how you arrived at these particular people.
Sure. So we work with a national vendor that sells phone numbers. And so we purchase a random sample of phone numbers, random digit dialing, a mixture of both landline and mobile phone numbers. And we put them into the Iowa Social Science Research Center's call center, where the students that are involved in the poll have been trained. And they come up on the computers and they dial them and they try and convince people to talk about issues of importance to Iowans and about the governor's race as well. So we follow pretty standard practices for the industry of getting random sample, random digit dial phone numbers. As I mentioned, we ended up completing interviews with 496 people, but of course we had to call many more times than that to get those 496.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more. When you dig down into this poll, do you have certain groups that jump out? Did you measure men, women, age groups here?
Yeah, and so a typical Hawkeye poll will ask roughly 50 questions. In this case, there was obviously a set of them that was focused on the governor's race, and we ask a lot of the kind of demographic questions that you were asking about. For a lot of the students involved in the classes, they get to ask questions about topics that they're interested in, that they develop in the class. You know, sometimes that can be one of the classes ask questions about whether or not Iowans would be interested in participating in gambling or online sports betting, given the recent Supreme Court decision. And so we have lots of different questions. Looking specifically at the governor's race, you see sort of a mirror to what's happening at the national level in Iowa, where we have very strong partisan divides on these issues. The way people see issues and see the governor's race is determined a lot by their partisan lens. One thing I would say in particular that we found notable for the governor's race was that while, you know, nearly all Republicans support Reynolds and nearly all Democrats support Hubble, independents are basically providing the margin for Hubble. They're about 8 to 10 points higher for Hubble. And so, you know, that roughly explains the gap that he has, the slight lead that we're showing for the election.
Mm-hmm. Barrett Biershank, you're a student at the University of Iowa studying political science. Tell us about your angle, your involvement in this poll.
Yeah, so as Fred said, I'm in a class called the Hawkeye Poll. And prior to the polling and calling, we learned about the different methodologies and all the careful considerations that you have to take into account when you're doing survey research such as this, about how careful you have to be with just designing the questions and how you ask the questions, because that can skew results. Mm-hmm. So then once it was time for polling, we had to do about an hour and a half of training and then followed by 10 hours of actual calling throughout those 2 weeks.
So you had actual 10 hours of calling. Do you have an idea of a number of how many people you reached or tried to reach?
Oh, well, I've tried to reach, I couldn't tell you. I think in those 10 hours, I probably talked to only 8 or 9 people.
So most people are not willing to do this.
Correct,
but you also have to keep in mind the daytime at which you're calling. Like, most of the times I was calling was early afternoon, so there's only a small population that's at home during those times.
Right. If we have such, you know, so many people not willing to take the poll, how do you know how that skews the numbers? Or do you? Can you adjust for that? That people, some people are just sick of polls.
Yeah, we start off by saying that you know, we call people at all times of day. We're calling mobile and landline, and students are typically making, you know, 20 to 30 dials an hour, getting busy signals, disconnected numbers, and then roughly, you know, they talk to about one person every hour, every other hour, mm-hmm. And complete a 15-minute interview. You know, what we do is we look at the distribution of key demographic variables after we collect the data and finish the survey. And in particular, we focus on age and gender. If you have enough data, you can look at additional factors. This year, because we were so focused on making predictions for an election, we also incorporated partisanship into it. And so what we do is we look at the distribution of those variables in the state of Iowa, say from the census. We get the age and gender breakdown. We get partisanship from the Secretary of State. And then we do what's common in the industry, which is try and weight the results to make it so that when you aggregate up, you get numbers, you get an underlying mix of people that is reflective of the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Barrett, in those 10 hours of calling, I imagine you had the whole spectrum from people you noticed you annoyed, and they got rid of you very quickly, to people who were glad to talk with you. What would you say, first and foremost, about what have you learned to kind of, let's say, hook people, to get people interested in taking part in the poll? Did you have a little bit of a learning curve about your approach there?
I would say a little bit. I mean, I think a big portion of it is just kind of having the people skills, the communication skills, kind of almost customer service skills to be friendly to begin with and be understandable that people may not have the time right then and there to take the survey. So you just have to remain polite and try your best to get somebody to do it. And if they do, then express sincere gratitude that they were willing to take the time to do it for us.
Has to be a problem that we get so many spam calls and they get misunderstood. Your call may be misunderstood as a spam call, right?
Correct. And that's another thing. People nowadays are getting a lot more calls from unknown numbers. So if they see another unknown number that could be us, they're obviously less likely to answer the phone for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's address the 2016 question that I mentioned at the outset here. There have been criticisms about the polling data when it comes to that election 2016. Also, the Brexit vote in the European Union. How do you talk about that, Fred, in your class? What is your analysis of what went wrong in 2016? Were the polls so off, or was it just our understanding of the science of polls so off? When we heard election night, I was sitting in this very studio, we heard, I think it was 538, 85% chance that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president. She, of course, did not become the next president. And then you were either pleasantly surprised or very disappointed in that surprise in the polls. What went wrong?
Well, I think in particular in the U.S. case for the 2016 election, if you look at the national polling results, they were actually really close to the final national poll result and within the margin of error. What happened there is that you have four or five, maybe six states in which the state level predictions went wrong, and therefore the Electoral College prediction was wrong. You know, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, some of those states. And, you know, that happens because while we have lots and lots of national polls and lots of national polling data, it's less common to have surveys focused on individual states. Obviously, you do have it for swing states and states where you think things are going to be close, but you just don't have as many polls to draw upon as you do nationally. And that means that the chance of getting something wrong or being off a little bit is much greater at the individual state level. And in this case, they were all wrong in the same direction. You know, one of the things that I talk about, or that I actually lectured on this in class last Thursday about polling and survey research, and made the point that, you know, after 2016, U.S. and Brexit, you know, there were a couple groups that did studies to try and analyze the overall performance of polling over time. And even despite those failures, they found that the average difference between the outcome and the prediction from the poll had been decreasing over time, right? We don't have 20-point mistakes like we did with Landon versus Roosevelt a long time ago. You know, now we have 2 or 3 percentage point mistakes that turn out to have really big consequences for the final outcome. And I think the polling industry, there's also a lot of challenges that have emerged because of the difficulty that we've already referenced in reaching people. You know, with cell phones, we had a very large increase in the proportion of calls that we made that went to answering machines or to voicemail, 10, 15 percentage points. And this is, you know, over the last 8 years, we saw a significant jump just this one time. And so things like that happen. And it means that the world of polling is evolving.
And it's getting harder.
Right, right. Exactly. It's harder to reach people and it's harder to get people to agree to talk.
Mm-hmm. Barrett, I understand your group focused on electoral votes versus the popular vote. What did you look at in particular there?
Correct. So at the start of the class, we got into groups for our final project. And for that, we were tasked with coming up with a question to include in the survey and then doing further research into what causes changes in the numbers. So like you said, we looked at since 2000, we've had two elections where the president was decided by the Electoral College, even though they didn't win the popular vote. We decided that would be an interesting thing to look at to see where public opinion was on that issue now. Unfortunately, like Fred said, we don't have all the data yet for the national poll. That was included on the national poll. It wasn't included on the Iowa poll. So we don't have the data on that yet just because we don't have a big enough sample size for that. But it'll be interesting to see those results.
Mm-hmm. Fred Bemke, what else do we want to talk about in relation to the Hawkeye poll that you're doing this year or have in previous years?
Well, just to dig into the results a tiny bit, one of the things that I wanted to – that I thought might be – or that is interesting is that, you know, in Iowa we have a strong economy right now. We have very low unemployment. And those sorts of things typically provide a big benefit for an incumbent like Governor Reynolds running for election. What we found is that when you start asking Iowans about issues that matter to them, that there was concern about issues that might not play that well for the Reynolds campaign. Healthcare emerged as a top issue for pretty much all groups, especially for Democrats and also for independents. And there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the Medicaid privatization and with their perception of how individual healthcare coverage is working. And so there are some issues that I think are providing a drag that are slowing down or making it harder for her to capitalize on the strong economic performance. And a lot of the things that I think the Republicans and Governor Reynolds would describe as kind of some of their signature policies last year, you know, some of them are finding strong support among Republicans, but overall and among independents, they don't seem to be doing as well as you might hope for if you're running on that as your platform.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. What was it during the Bill Clinton era? Didn't they have a slogan in their campaign headquarters? It's the economy, stupid, right?
Yes. Yep.
And you're saying it's not always the economy, or when the economy is good, it's other things.
Yes. You know, and I think, I mean, there are other aspects to the economy that people are talking about besides just unemployment and growth, right? It's about who it's including. Wage growth is picking up a little, but has still been relatively slow for such a long expansion. There's obviously concerns about inequality that are being raised on the national stage. And so I think that while the top line numbers are very good for the economy, there is some weakness there that may be undermining that a little bit. But a lot of these issues, I think, are where we're seeing some reluctance, perhaps, or a little bit of a drag.
Mm-hmm. We're seeing this election come at the same time, about a year into what has been called the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. Has that entered into your polling design at all?
Absolutely. So we asked about the importance of women's rights as one of the key issues. We found very strong support for that as an important issue among Democrats, much less so among Republicans and somewhere in between for independents.
Doesn't matter whether if you're a female Republican, you're still saying it's not as important?
The margins are much smaller. The partisanship effect is dominating some of the gender
Trump's
effects
the
on
gender.
Those questions. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They both matter, but the partisanship effect is very large.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so you were going on about the Kavanaugh, that big controversy from
yes.
It seems like ancient history, but it's only from the beginning of October, huh?
It was the day we were getting our final approval from the Human Subjects Review folks at the University of Iowa about our question wording was the day of the hearings. With Dr. Blasey Ford and Justice Kavanaugh. And we weren't sure what was going to happen, right? That's one of the challenges of running polls for, you know, popular events is you don't know what those events are going to do in the next week or two while you're in field. So in this case, we asked what they felt about the confirmation, if they supported or opposed his confirmation, thinking that either way, right, that question should make sense. You know, we found, again, a very strong partisan split, as you'd expect from what you've heard nationally, with almost all Democrats opposing and almost all Republicans supporting, independents-leaning opposition. And again, you get a big partisan effect there. You do see a little bit more support, more opposition among women, but the partisan effect is by far the biggest.
Mm-hmm. Barrett, as a student of political science being introduced in a big way to the science of polling, what are your biggest takeaways as far as surprises or things that you learned that just weren't known to you before that you would say, hey, remember this about polling?
I mean, I would definitely say I have a newfound respect for individuals that do more calling than the 10 hours I did, because it can be a grind when you go for a two-hour shift and you don't get a call for an hour and you're just begging somebody to pick up the phone just so you can talk to
you
somebody.
You want those numbers.
Yeah, you actually want to talk to people. Otherwise, it's just dial, 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 dial.
You get a little bit of abuse there.
Yeah, so it's I definitely have a newfound respect for that, as well as the actual careful consideration and accuracy that goes on behind the scenes.
So when you're called by someone who purports to be a pollster, you'll listen.
Yes.
Right? You won't say, no time, bye.
Okay. I would say so.
Okay. You mentioned, you know, keeping up with the news is something I think, Fred Bemke, you in political science and polling have in common with those of us in journalism. The speed of the news cycle has increased tremendously in the last 2-3 years here. It seems to be, for us, we're out of breath keeping up with it, you know. Something happens, well, 2 days ago, and then it gets overshadowed by something that happened yesterday, and then we know the same thing will happen tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. How is polling dealing with that?
Well, I think you see more snap short polls that you know, firms and news media are doing to try and get quick responses to these issues as they crop up. And so they'll put something out in field and do it relatively quickly. There are some new techniques in polling that try to harvest the power of the internet and web surveys to be able to develop large samples of individuals from which they can focus on an appropriate subsample to ask questions and get really quick responses, because you know you can do a web survey much faster than you can do a phone survey if you have a willing and ready set of people to respond.
Mm-hmm. So what is the future of polling, with people more and more reticent to answer polling? How do you get an accurate assessment of what the feelings are about any number of issues?
One of the challenges is that the harder it is to get responses, the more you rely on the assumptions and the statistical procedures that you apply to try and make the data appear more representative. Certainly doing online polling in a very thoughtful, well-developed way is one of the current trends that you see. I think looking for a way to develop that as more and more people get online and internet access finally gets to everybody, mm-hmm. That will be beneficial for doing it. But you always face the same challenges, that it's the people that are willing to talk to you that you talk to. And, you know, oftentimes those people end up on both sides of the issues. But, you know, we get people that will talk for an hour for a 15-minute survey with our student callers.
Do you ever detect people who you get the feeling they're deliberately giving you answers that to throw you off?
That's something we talked about in class, was this idea of social desirability, which is that people may not say their true opinion because they're scared to admit what they're actually thinking. Mm-hmm. So I would say there might have been a couple individuals that I called that maybe were a little hesitant to give their real answers, but I couldn't say for sure either.
Scared to give their real opinion, but also there, I would think there might be some who just want to throw a wrench into the works. Fred.
It's possible. I know I heard stories that there were a couple of people who were asking who I was and why I was calling them and how they were going to follow up with me, although they never did. And so you get all types when you're calling the whole public.
Well, it's been very fascinating talking with you, Fred Bemke, a professor of political science at the University of Iowa, Barrett Bierschenk, a student of political science involved in the Hawkeye Poll. That's the name of the class,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for telling us about the Hawkeye Poll and telling us a lot of things about polling that I'm sure we didn't know. Okay, including myself. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us.
Yep, thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop. Also helped today from Lulu Dewey. Phil Moss in Cedar Falls helped us out as well. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We always welcome your comments and questions. Email us anytime, river2river@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.